Welcome to another...
The official podcast of The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
Do you hear that, Ern? The Leaky Cauldron.
Just go! You're wasting time!
Welcome to Pottercast, your number one source for news, theories, discussion and interviews with people from the Potter books and films. I know a small amount myself, having written the books. My name is J.K. Rowling. I am now happy to introduce your hosts, Melissa, John and Sue.
Welcome back, guys. It is Pottercast 151. Woo-hoo. 151. I'm Melissa, just so we can get all our voices straight. I am Melissa. I'm here with Sue Upton. Sue, why don't you say your name now?
Hi, I'm Sue Upton. How y'all doing?
Oh my God, it's Sue!
It's
Frank,
me.
Who are you?
Sue! That's me.
Frank?
Huh?
Who are you? Say your name for the record, please.
My name is Frank. Frankie Franco. Or Frankie Franco.
Amazing.
Or Frank Franco
name.
Or Frack, whatever you want to call me.
And John, let's just get you on record just for the sake of it. And I'm wrong!
And I'm wrong!
And your
hands
all sweaty!
Now that we have that terribly difficult business out of the way, let's say hello to Pottercast number 151, where we're talking again for the almost third year straight about Harry Potter, Harry Potter, Harry Potter, Harry Potter, Harry Potter. Yeah. So before we do anything else...
I'm getting kind of tired of these books.
No, you're not.
Thank you. Oh my God, somebody said shut up to John before I could. That was amazing. That might be the first time this ever happened.
I just know John well enough now that he knows I don't mean it in a mean way.
I love it. I got backup. Okay, welcome, welcome, welcome. Before we do anything else, we have to hear from our friends at Audible.com. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of spoken word entertainment. Get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. Go to audible.com/pottercast today for details.
All back.
And we're back. Hello.
Hello.
Woo.
Welcome back.
What is up this week, guys?
How's everybody doing this week?
Huh?
Great.
I'm waiting for the trailer. I want the trailer. I'm just saying.
Next week, we think?
Oh, I want to see it so
bad. I think
this
week.
We're putting bets?
I'm thinking.
This week or like when this podcast comes out within the next 6 or 7 days?
Yes, I agree. Whenever this podcast comes out, it'll be the week that this podcast comes out. That's what my little puffly senses are saying.
I'll be here first.
Yeah.
Sewell Trelawney.
That's a pretty good Trelawney, Sue.
Yeah.
Pulling a Trelawney.
So I have some sherry to toast that. Kind of.
All right, what else is happening in the news this week?
Speaking of movies and stuff, we keep, speaking of trailers and things, we kind of saw a little teeny bit, like, on of Opal Yarn, of all things, Yarn Packaging, of all things. We saw new pictures, stills of...
Yarn, did you
what?
Say?
What?
On Yarn, seriously.
Yarn?
Yeah, there was a whole...
Oh.
Do you remember that we had a poster on Leaky, and it wasn't an official Half-Blood Prince poster, but it was an official poster of some sort? It was for Yarn.
Yes, Yarn.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. There was some poster that we had in a news article, and it looked official,
yarn.
That it made a news post, but it was for Yarn. I don't know what this is. Sue, do you have more information about what this Yarn thing is?
It's actually a company.
Like, it's just Yarn?
It is. It's Yarn. It's a legitimate yarn company, and they're making special, like, yarn for Harry Potter yarn. So, because, like, you know, scarves and socks and whatever not. And each of these are wrapped with a different thing, and they say, I know, believe it or not, and they have new photos of Harry. They have one of Harry and Ron. They have one of Tonks, of Lupin. It says Harry Potter and Apple Pence. But it's in German. So whether or not they got the word from Warner Brothers not to put the stuff out, I don't know. It's very bizarre. Very bizarre.
Did they have any of Harry and Jenny Megan out?
No, sorry. There's no necking yarn for you. No snogging yarn.
Necking.
That'd be the most popular because that's what sells.
Probably would.
When I go to look for yarn, I look for the sex appeal.
Yes. Good quality for yarn to have.
It is.
I don't know. You know, I mean, we have...
If I sew with this yarn, I'm going to get the kiss, Jenny.
I mean, of all the places that you would think that we would see...
Probably Harry would probably be more appropriate there.
You know, it's hard just to not, like, want to respond to him, but it's just... want to kind of keep moving right along. I don't... Anyway, so that's in our galleries, and I don't know. I don't know Warner Brothers.
Moving right along. Yeah. Sexy yarn. That's fun.
Speaking of Tonks, we heard from Natalia Tena, who plays Tonks, and she was at a Collectomanias, which are, like, you know, conventions where people, you can go get their autographs and stuff, and she talked to one of the fan sites, and she said she's only in one scene in Half-Blood Prince. And it was the attack on the Burrow.
Aww.
What? Didn't she also say something else?
Yes, she said that they just kind of show up as a couple. And then in Deathly Hallows, she wants to fly with pregnant belly as Tonks.
Whoa, cool.
But is it her that said that Dumbledore's funeral is not
in
the movie?
Yes, she did say that. And we don't know, but she said that they're not filming that. They didn't film it.
Right. I mean, it's not from Warner Brothers, but it is kind of big news.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I wanted to see that.
What?
I mean,
I know that
are they gonna have the story be like they didn't have a funeral, or like they just be like, oh, I just got back from the funeral, that was rough.
Maybe they just don't go through the motions of having the funeral. Maybe it's just the next day they talk, they go their ways, and you know.
Yeah, I have to say this is kind of poetic for all of the chopping of the end of the movie Dumbledore bits. This is like the final chopping of the end of the book, end of the movie Dumbledore bit, not having his funeral. It's like, well, we're gonna come Deathly Hallows, we're gonna have the bit in the little afterlife dream sequence kind of thing, and Dumbledore, you know, probably will just call Harry on the phone or something at that point and be like,
They could make it very dramatic and just kind of like, you know, like go from his shot of his body and everything gathered around to like a fadeaway scene to like his tomb, like in the distance the next morning. You know, they fade up or something and then come, you can see the white tomb, glittering in the background. And then they can just go to Harry and them like walking away from her or something. I mean, you can just like get the message without actually having that scene, which I can see them doing for effect. But
okay,
I heard that they were going to have him spontaneously combust like a phoenix. When he hit the ground.
And then the little baby
he was going to fall off the tower and then hit the ground and turn into like a bunch of blue and purple sparkles and things. Like the dragon.
And then we'll have that same overhead shot of watching him.
We're ruining the end of Enchanted for people.
Oh, there's no dragon in Enchanted.
There's no dragon.
I love that movie. I don't even care who knows. I love that movie.
That's the movie's amazing. What do you mean you don't care who knows? Why would you care?
I don't know. My sisters even teased me about liking that movie, but whatever.
Movie's great. It's just
okay. Cause you know how we were talking about like scenes that they're cutting, like you know the Dumbledore scene. But one thing that they might have put in because there was like we keep hearing like little minor casting parts, but there was somebody that was cast as somebody named Sophie who's in the opening. On the casting site, it says that she was in the opening boardroom scene of Half-Blood Prince. Boardroom.
Opening boardroom scene. Is this going to be like a
Ministry
of Magic
thing? I don't
know.
That's what we're all talking.
Or the minister.
I thought they had cut that. We had heard rumors before that they had cut the other minister chapter, you know, scene.
Oh.
And then they had cut the other minister chapter, you know. But now if they cast somebody for that, maybe it's in. I don't know.
Maybe because think about that. What that scene would be. It would be a lot of people who have never been in a Harry Potter movie before and Cornelius Fudge and Rufus Scrimgeour who really aren't the type who are going to get rumors going around the internet. They're kind of those actors who kind of stay by themselves. You know?
I heard that they cast Tony Blair.
Yes, John. They cast Tony Blair.
He was into it. He's like, you know, Harry Potter was big for my country and I want to be leave my mark.
They should cast Tatum and the Queen.
He'd be really good. Good actor.
He was great.
Yeah, it was.
He was great.
Well, he's just teaching classes now these days, isn't he? Isn't he a professor now or something?
Yeah. Just one.
Yeah.
He can take a few sick days and go shoot a few scenes.
Why do you have a yen for it to be Tony Blair? What's the deal?
Because it's cool. Because he would have been prime minister at the time that this is happening.
Yeah. Well,
okay. So.
Wouldn't he? How long was he prime minister for?
No, I think you're right. It's in that time.
It ain't going to happen. You know, it's just not going to happen, John.
You know?
this big reveal. Like, oh.
Oh, just screaming in the theater. Oh,
okay,
my gosh.
You know what? Which is really fascinating. Love the BBC. I do. I love them. And I was really surprised, but they showed some aerial footage of Leeson Studios in England where they filmed the Harry Potter movies. And they showed all the sets out back. They showed Privet Drive set. They showed the footage of the Burrow. You can see the Burrow, which is really cool. It looks really cool. And it looks like that they've created, and some are speculating it's the orphanage, but I think it's the base of the astronomy tower. Because if you look, it's like an enclosed courtyard, and then because we have all the caps in our galleries, and there's like a rounded thing, like it's the astronomy tower. That's what I think it is. Way cool.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. That'd be cool.
But, I mean,
I remember when we were there for the thing, it was raining all day, and we couldn't go out and look at any of the sets.
gross.
Yeah.
Okay. Bummerone.
I want to say Joe did a couple things. There's one she's contributed this, it's called a story card for a charity auction that her and some other authors are going to donate, and they're going to auction off, something for a dyslexia charity in the UK. And it's going to be some sort of creative thing. We don't know what it is. It's on a blank thing. We don't know if it's going to be a little short story, if it's going to be a sketch. We don't know. But I thought that was... be kind of cool to bid on. And this is one more legal thing. Joe won a legal matter in the UK, and I think it has, and the reasons why we're talking about this is about photographs involving photographs of her young son, David, and they had taken that court, right, Melissa? They had gone to court, and it was on the appeal.
Yeah, and it just shows you how you have to try on these things. It's been 2 years since she filed this case, and she lost the initial case and appealed it, and it was reversed on appeal. And it's basically, it's an interesting ruling because it's saying that while they accept that even to an extent her husband, but mostly Joe, accepts that she's a public figure and pictures will get taken, that doesn't automatically mean that your children are public figures too and are applicable to the same rules. So they're basically saying that children of celebrities have a right to be protected, and I think that's important legislation, certainly in Britain, but all over the globe, you know, so.
I respect her so much for, you know, just putting up with all the tedious paperwork and the time frame for that, because it sets such a nice precedent. Like, I was subbing today, and we watched a video on just corporations and how, like, originally corporations were started to help, and they had agendas, but then, like, just through legal loopholes, they've become these beings, these entities in the size of the law without the repercussions like people would have if they were doing the same thing. It's really interesting. And it's just, it goes with, just to show like our courts have such influence on our society, and the fact that she kind of stuck with it just to kind of set this positive precedent is so encouraging.
It's really encouraging for somebody with the resources to do so, fighting these kind of things, because the children can't, and most authors aren't really in a position to use their money that way. And most other celebrities, let's be frank, haven't really fought these battles because...
Well, a lot of them use it to their advantage.
Right.
It's annoying. They'll sell the stories. They'll sell the pictures to the magazines.
Right.
And they'll just perpetuate that this is okay and that we're used to seeing, you know, whatever
Surrey.
Oh, yeah, $3 million and all this stuff. Yeah.
You know, all nine of Angelina Jolie's kids.
So finally somebody's thinking about the interests of the actual children, which I think is admirable.
And you know, and I mean, I'm all for freedom of expression, you know, I mean, you should have it, but there's no need. Why do you need to see the photographs of their young 18-month-old children? Why? Why? What's the point of that?
To be honest, until Radio City Music Hall, when I saw her in person, not Carnegie Hall, but Radio City, because it just happened to turn around and she was there, I'd never seen Jessica Rowling. I'd never seen a picture. Like, that's how private they've been, which is kind of amazing.
And good for her, you know? I mean, they said in their statement they want a normal life for their children.
Right.
And, you know, her and her husband, Dr. Murray. And you know what? Good for them. Bring it on. That's good.
Do we have other legal stuff to talk about this week?
What's Mr. Hammer up to this week?
Mr. Hammer is preparing his briefs today as we're recording this, but maybe by the time this comes out, we'll have... Oh, God. I hope by the time this comes out, we don't have to record a whole other podcast discussing the end.
No.
But soon there'll either be a judgment or a settlement, which I would have no reason not to believe they aren't working on a settlement if they can get there, in the Lexicon case. So that's what's happening now. We're still just
sweet.
Really?
Waiting.
I can't wait to start my Mr. Hammer fan site.
Sean.
With all the Flash animation films I'm going to make with him going on adventures and fighting crime and hammering things.
He's
going to
see you
awesome.
Eventually.
It could be a completely other different Mr. Hammer. It's a very
There's
common
There's so many
name.
Of them.
Oh, yes. A hammer-shaped biped action hero fighting crime by hitting people with its head.
Just a reminder for those who aren't familiar, we're not taking advantage of people knowing what goes on here. The Lexicon case is... the one in which JKR and Warner Brothers are attempting to stop publication of an unauthorized encyclopedia. And basically the judge now has to figure out, the trial's happened and the judge has to look at everything that's gone on and figure out whether the book can be published as is or not. And in the meantime, as he has urged and judges tend to urge, they are working and hopefully in the background to try and get to a place where they can settle so that it doesn't have to set precedent.
and take like 5 years in appeals court.
Somebody else talk about what else is happening in the lawsuit this week so that we can dispense.
I haven't been following it this week, to be honest.
You lie.
What?
There was an article that appeared in the New Yorker magazine, and it's New Yorker yeah.
Oh, that one. These articles coming out with these people trying to write about the J.K. Rowling case because they think it's going to sell articles, and they do the bare minimal research about it and try to make, you know, cute jokes about it and make you know, queer drawings of Joe and Steve in their article, and, you know, whatever.
Such stupid.
Can you explain?
And their clever language that they use too. It's like, oh, she's so poignant with the verbiage they use.
Sue, so can you explain before we get to
yes. No, that's fine. This was written by a man named Tim Wu, who is a professor of law, I believe, at Columbia University, and I believe attended the trial that John and Melissa attended as well in New York of the W.A.
Yeah, I recall it perfectly because I remember who he was sitting next to.
And the point of this article was not to talk about the legal merits of the case. It was titled Fan Feud. And the point was to talk about how the fandom is between Steve Van Der Ark and Melissa. And trying to say, you know, there was quotes that, you know, I don't even have to verbalize this. But it was,
it was...
They were ridiculous.
Two quotes...
What he
two
said
quotes
something
in
like,
there are, yes. We should just clarify right now. They were misquoted and also taken out of context. Mr. Wu has apologized to me after lengthy conversations, and the New Yorker has agreed to run a correction.
Really?
Yes. Okay, so basically there were two quotes. One was that were ascribed to me that were... All right, so basically there were these two quotes. One was, quote-unquote, he's vilified now, referring to Steve. The other one was, he has ruined his good standing. Now, technically, I did not say those things. Technically, in last week's or the weeks before that's podcast, Sue said those things, but... Even though she said those things, and that's the accurate thing, the way it was portrayed in the article still isn't quite fair, because it was saying, it was used as evidence that we have this feud and we are vilifying him, but Sue wasn't saying, we announced that he is vilified now. Sue was saying, you know,
the Lincoln Holland has declared.
Declaration. Like, no, he was saying, like, this is what's happening in the fandom. He's been vilified and he's ruined his standing. And
place my cauldron stamp upon this parchment.
Yeah, I know.
Be made into law. Let the fans say this.
Ludicrous. Yeah. So there's
we're
that. And then later, John's words got taken out of context. John, who was just, John's, and if you look really closely, I discovered when I was rereading this article for the 18 millionth time, if you look really closely, the statements don't follow. Because they're used as, John's words were, it's like if a family member goes out and does something horrible, John said, whatever. There's no room for sympathy. If you look at those two quotes, they don't make sense. Because it's like when a family member does something horrible, is you're saying there's sympathy, but they're still your family. And John said that as an argument for sympathy. And much later, or maybe much earlier, just certainly not connected, you said there's no room for sympathy when you were talking about how you don't feel the sympathy for being outcast from a fan community when you don't feel you want to be like a fan.
Exactly. So, that's why it was ridiculous. Yes. And I remember they called me. I was driving on my way to the zoo with my sister and my nephew, and this lady calls to fact check, and I'm like, you know, let me call the effing transcription elves. I don't remember why I said we've done 151 of these things.
That's what I said to her, too. She said to me, we got this from the podcast. Did you say this? I said, look, I really can't remember. I'm not going to tell you yes. I'm not going to tell you no. You have to go look at the podcast. And clearly she went back to the podcast and heard that the quote was there but didn't check that it was my voice and not Sue's. And since I spent like an hour or 45 minutes on the phone with Tim Wu, I feel like that error should have been his to catch, you know?
No.
But he's apologized, and that's all that's, you know, that's all that's necessary as far as that thing is concerned, as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, people read articles, they don't read corrections, so damage is done. And then, John, say what happened at the end of the article, because I...
Oh, the whole quote on how he said that Melissa Anelli is comfortable with her position. J.K. Rowling is God and she is her prophet. Whatever. I'm sorry.
No, it's a pretty.
To yourself. That's a very heavy statement.
It's a pretty. Yeah. You know, how damning is it? To say that J.K. Rowling respects somebody as a fan and someone who's done a pretty good job. You know, representing, you know, the interests of the fans and using, you know, any kind of influence having a big Potter fan site has to protect the fans against, you know, spoilers and everything else that the site's done. So yeah, to say that, you know, Joe would appreciate somebody like that, that's a pretty mean thing to say, I think. And, you know, what, I don't know, what, it's a very transparent motivation behind saying something like that, so.
In context, the comment followed a statement that Joe had sought me out and hugged me during the proceedings.
It was a dark alley, and
yes.
She was looking both ways first, and it was very shady. There was drugs exchanged.
But if I'm not mistaken, I don't even think Steve was in the courtroom for that, to be very honest. I don't think he saw it. I think this article might have been how he found out, but... And he said, you know, that might have done more to hurt Mr. Vanderhoek than the rest of it. And he said something like, I can't blame her for liking her status, which is just... I found out about it about 2 o'clock in the morning, and John was the only person awake.
Yeah.
He sent through this email, like, completely distraught and in shock. And John got to hear my blubberings. But poor John.
Poor John.
Yeah.
No, whatever.
I spent a very long time on the phone with Mr. Wu for this article, talking about the actual... concept of the case, and during which he told me that he thought that I had turned him around on the case. He's been a very active pro-RDR person, and he's been a very clear advocate of expanding copyright. He repeatedly asked me to comment on the breakup of my and Steve Vanderhoek's friendship, and I wouldn't, and I kept saying no. And then he said something like, he called him a rogue fan, and then he went, wait, did you say he was a rogue fan? I said, no. He said, do you want to? I said, no. And like every time he asked, I just said,
are
like,
you kidding me?
I'm sorry, it's personal, and I'm just not.
Oh.
So I was very hurt, and that's all I'm going to say about it.
Okay. It I'm going to say this. It disturbs me that this point has been reached in this outcome of the case. It has nothing to do with legal matters, nothing. And having worked in the media, and I love it, it's what I do. I spent the last 20 years of my life, and that's what I do. I love it. But when we take this kind of, you know, making fun of fans, has been pointed out to me, this is nothing new. Making fun of, you know, we're all people, it's easy for the media to say, oh, look at these freaks, these geeks, these whatever. But to try, I believe this was a deliberate attempt, and this is my opinion, my personal opinion, that it was a deliberate attempt to stir the pot where there was not pot to be stirred. There's enough out there as it is. And it disappointed me on so many levels, I can't even, I just, why are we here? Why are we at this point? This has been very difficult for me, and I don't understand this, I don't understand we got to this point, I don't see the need for this, and... You know, I'm glad he apologized. I'm glad he apologized to Melissa, but you know what?
Yes.
He is a professor.
Wait, who apologized?
Someone, and I would like to get my doctorate too. And if I would ever teach my students that this is the kind of quality journalism, then I would not be I would not consider myself a viable educator, and I would be ashamed of that. And I find this just, you know, I understand you get to a point and you get emotional, and there's been so much anger on both sides, there's been so much, and it's been very, 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 very difficult as a person who's tried to see both sides. It's just been horrible to sit and watch this, and then when I see something like this printed, that the New Yorker has a million readers, they are a widely respected magazine. And, I know.
And so everything you say is 100%. It was because it was the New Yorker. I mean, there's a million blogs out there that say a million different things, and nobody's going to kick up dirt about that. But when a respected institution of journalism says something like that about you and makes those implications, you know, to clarify, he apologized to me about the misquote. He didn't make no apologies about the tone of the article, which I agree with you is wrong. And
it's about as absurd as the illustration that accompanied it to me, and that's what I saw that thing. That's the first thing I saw. I'm like, what is this clown trying to do here? You know, and so I read the whole article in that light of, you know, gosh, I've really taken this.
I understand that Mr. Wu has, he's a fair use proponent, and that's fine. That's his thing. And if this is supposed to be an opinion piece, I it wasn't really reading to me as an opinion piece, but more as like trying to be a factual thing. I mean, I personally don't think that either side looked very, you know, wow. And you know what? He's entitled to his opinion, but my God, this is not the way to do it. My God, I'm sorry. That's just...
It's just, and he couldn't understand. He kept saying things like, you know, but it's flattering to you. And I'm like, no, he's like, well, I publicized that you have a good relationship with Joe. And I'm just like, well, that's neither here nor there. That's not something to throw a party about, you know?
An issue, and it's kind of a backhand way of doing it.
This is what you have to understand. It has been 7 months of this trial. 7 months of watching the fandom go at each other with the teeth there. 7 months of being very upset personally about things that are private, about things, about revelations that have been made, about the breakup of something that I thought was a friendship, about everything. And I've worked very hard, sometimes successfully, sometimes not successfully. I'll be very honest about that, but, you know, I'm human like everybody else. And to keep my comments and to keep everything sterile and not stir things, not do that. And I said to him, and then you took something that could only look harsh in print and ascribed it to me in the New Yorker. I was like, so can you understand why that upsets me? And that's when he apologized. So it's, being in journalism is like being a privately paid public servant. You have a responsibility to not do this to people, which is why we've never made sweeping declarations and opinions in our posts about this, because it's just not, you know, and so, yeah, this has been a really trying week for that.
You know, and I'm not going to make any, Steve is my friend. Here, if we haven't said it before, hey, Steve is my friend. And it's been hard for me to watch this and see this kind of thing, and I don't think that this personally helped his side, if you have to say a side. I don't think anybody benefited by that piece. And I don't understand.
No,
I keep going back to this, and it's a mantra. So I don't understand it. I don't get why we're at this point anymore. And I'm praying that there's a settlement, and maybe it's foolish and naive of me to hope so, but I keep hoping that we could reach something.
I hope so too. I hope it's written to be a great commentary plus encyclopedia that includes a lot of facts and does all the right sourcing and does all the everything. I hope it's
right.
Redone to all those specifications and is awesome. And I hope Mr. Van der Ark goes on to a happy and healthy and fruitful and long and most of all healthy life, whether that's in fandom, outside of fandom, whatever. I think you are right in the statements that you have recently made publicly, that to see the fandom just going like this and like this and like this is... Anyway, what I just said that you might have missed is that I just hope that just to see the fandom go back and forth and be vicious is really wearing on everybody. And it's just, you know, I wake up every day and I go see what's happening with this, because it's incumbent upon the people who run the site to just kind of keep, you know, it's a big issue right now, and I can't tell you what it's like. It's just a constant drain, like there's a faucet on my brain, you know?
I haven't really been reading a hell of a lot of it myself, but I mean, when you say it's splitting the fandom, is there honestly that many people on the other side of this?
No, I think it's just minority of fandom, honestly. I think that people have strong views, but if you're talking about the fandom as a whole, you can't make generalizations that way. I think there's maybe 10% of fandom generally who's really seriously interested, and another 10% of that who are actually active.
And I think there's an awful lot of us that are hurt by it all.
Maybe.
And that's a reality. I think a lot of us just want this. They can't believe this. And, you know, no one wants this. I mean, who wants this? Who wants it? No one. Yeah.
Oh, nobody. 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 Nobody wants it. I don't care what you say
exactly.
to anybody on either side.
Exactly.
Nobody
right.
wanted
exactly.
to go to court.
Yes, please.
Can we get out of this? I'm like, you got to see. I'm like tearing my hair. I'm like rushing.
Okay.
Let's talk about some canon, and then we have some more auditions this week. The last
John, we have the
we'll do
thing
it
in Florida.
The wrap up.
Okay, I thought we should announce it here, but Okay.
I'll remember it more in the wrap-up.
Okay, well, listen to the wrap-up, everybody.
Okay. We have the third round of, not the third round, but the third part of our first round of auditions for the acting troupe coming up, too. And we will have our polls fixed on podcast.com very soon. And we'll leave the voting open for all three of those parts for you guys to...
We should also put up a flash file of the actual audition pieces above each poll, I think. Just to be fair, because it's been... People don't remember, you know?
Yeah, that'd be handy.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's push on.
Yay! To the drum. Oh, to the other stuff.
To everything else.
Now it's time for Canon Conundrums. Listen in as our panel tries to figure out one specific issue from the Harry Potter canon.
Who could possibly figure that out?
And here we are with Canon Conundrums.
What are we talking about?
Canon Conundrums.
We are doing everybody's favorite game.
It is.
What house were they in?
Me too.
I like
we play the Sorting Hat. That's just a blatant disregard for popular
opinion.
Belief here, yeah. And here we are with the...
I think we should make a Sorting Hat
we
song.
We should. Like, it's time to sort people on the podcast. So, sorting's fun.
I can't wait to have a big list.
But I swear, I know, but actually, though, we decided this might be our last
one. For a while. We'll bring it back later.
Not because anybody said not to do it anymore, just because we're running out of characters and we want to save some for later shows.
We're not running out of characters. There are so many characters in these books. We're not running out of characters. I think we're a little bit bored, too.
Yeah.
No,
but this
bored.
Is a good
we're
one. I'm excited
here
about this one.
This is what we've been saving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is Mr. Aberforth Abe Dumbledore. Yeah.
Abe Dumbledore. And everyone's like, well, shouldn't he automatically be
a
Gryffindor? But I don't know about
that. That's what you would think. The Dumbledore family is not your run-of-the-mill ordinary family. So traditional traditions may not apply to family members.
Well, it's not a rule. It's just like a rule, you know. It's just kind of happens
true.
That way. Because look at the
you do have the
twins and their
separate. What's the Petulsman's history, by the way? Are they magic family? Are they muggle family? Do we know?
I think they're. I don't think we know, but I would imagine they're at least like half. But I don't know why I would think.
No, I'm just curious because I don't know. When you're a magical family and you have, is it sort of like getting into Harvard because your grandfather went there? Like, is it that if your whole family is in Gryffindor, does that weight it? You know? Yeah, legacy.
It's
that's
legacy.
The word I'm set. Thank you, John. You are the one between us that has the vocabulary.
Yeah.
Clearly you are. You're the one who came up with the word, so what am I saying?
Here I am.
No, I don't know. I'm just curious because it's tempting to just call him a Gryffindor, but I'm stumped.
I don't think he is either. Do you?
I think he is.
He has been hiding out. He's hiding out in that office.
Yeah, I think he's Gryffindor.
He's just hanging out there. There's no bravery to this guy.
Well, there's this quiet bravery.
There's no bravery.
That he doesn't buy into all this stuff, so he just... Well, I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think he is?
Yeah.
I think he's a Slytherin. I think that would have been a very interesting dynamic for him and Albus to be a Gryffindor and Slytherin.
You know what? I disagree. Because that actions at the end were not about saving himself, looking for him. He helped those people in and out. And I think he's a Hufflepuff. And I know you're going to be, oh, God, here she goes again. But... I'm just saying he did not have to stand up in that manner to make sure that those kids got in, those people got in and out that whole time. He could have closed down that whole passageway any old time he wanted to. I just,
you know, that's brave too. I'm stuck between Ravenclaw. I mean Hufflepuff and Gryffindor, actually.
Yeah.
Here's the problem with this guy.
I think
if we wanted to be sorting people post their Hogwarts days and we said, what house is Severus Snape in, we all might come up with something different than Slytherin. So to try to sort
Aberforth. What we should do next is to really sort all the adults that we know of.
I would love to talk about Snape.
To try to
sure. Totally. Because I think he's a Gryffindor.
Yeah.
And people would be like, oh! But I do. I think he's a, yeah.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Who's Snape? No, he's a Slytherin, because look at why he was doing this. He was doing it
for don't get it started now, because I'll go on forever.
I'm not denying that he wasn't brave.
We can't start this. We can't start this.
Yeah.
Sorry, we won't bunny trail. We won't
bunny trail.
What, you never heard that expression?
No.
A bunny trail. It's like a bunny trail. It's like when you get off the main course. It's like a tangent.
I mean, like,
oh, like off the main road, and there's a little trail that a bunny left because the bunny.
Yeah, it's like,
oh, God, I thought you were talking about eating
only
bunnies.
John.
Like, I've been called out on that a few times. Like, I'll say, oh, we're on a bunny trail, and everyone's like, WTF, what are you talking about, bunny trail?
Yeah.
I'm like, what do you mean? And then I said something the other day. I said, what did I say? I said, oh, dang it. And everyone was all like, what in the world do you mean by that? Oh, peckish. I feel a little
peckish. Yes, I was there for that.
Yeah, John was there, and then everyone was like looking at me like, what are you talking about?
Peckish.
I'm like, I'm hungry, like a bird.
It's peckish.
It peckish.
Yeah, yeah. I hate when real definitions of words that sound like things that you can interpret badly make immature people react badly and reduce our vocabulary because immature people can't feel.
What are you talking about? Peckish.
You know, we're moving on. So I'm thinking that Dumbledore or Albus or Aberforth was still Hufflepuff. I'm still back on that.
Yeah.
That, you know, although you raise a good point about being Gryffindor, because that was brave. I mean, he could have gotten his butt just terminated by this. You know?
Now here's what
Death Eaters.
Here's what I'm saying, though, about...
Even when he was younger, though.
Yeah, we're talking about knowing what we know of him as a younger man,
yeah.
Closer to what he would have been sorted.
As a younger man, how is he Slytherin? I see nothing to support that. He's not a very ambitious guy. He wanted to stay home and take care of his sister. How ambitious is that?
Pretty darn ambitious.
If anyone's ambitious, Dumbledore is. He was the one who wanted to go out and be all the awards and whatnot.
That's true. Well, he punched Dumbledore in the nose.
What is that?
Okay. Well,
I just think you are appealed to the dichotomy of the Slytherin and Gryffindor that we already experienced with Sirius and Regulus. So why play out that type of storyline again?
Is it interesting? And so, like, to do things in Paris.
But come on, let's talk about Brave for a second. In a more sly way, in a less run into the middle of the fight kind of way, he's doing something very brave. He's standing up to all those Death Eaters. He's bringing kids in and out from Hogwarts. He lies right to their face.
Absolutely.
About the
yeah.
About the goat.
The Patronus.
That's
the
right.
Patronus.
Even when he's younger too, like he was willing to sacrifice. You know, he wanted. Well, I guess it's Hufflepuff when he's younger. Like not caring about he's willing to stay home and take care of his sister, but he stood up to his brother about it.
Yeah. But he is also a pragmatist. I mean, this is what he says to Harry: you've got to get as far from here as you can. You can't win; just cut your losses and run. You know.
Right. I just view him as a Hufflepuff, just because and I'm not saying because I thought he does exude and exhibit some bravery in that sense, and it doesn't mean you're so overt. I just tend to think of Gryffindors as more being willing to openly leap into the fray, and I think all the other houses exhibit bravery as well, but they doesn't necessarily just be overt about it as much as, like, I just think Gryffindors are just right there, you know? I don't know.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I don't know. I waver on that. I don't know. Maybe it's that choice thing, again, that Joe is saying, that if you sort too soon, you know, that maybe Aberforth just needed to come to his own, you know, development and his own point in his life where he's just got to make these decisions and find that, you know? So, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is a stumper.
Would a Gryffindor really have a goat fetish?
I think that fetishes has nothing to do with your house sorting situation, I think.
Yeah. Nothing at all.
Well...
Nothing.
I could imagine the sorting hat up there being like, well, there's some ambition here and some family loyalty, and there's also a fondness of goats. So, we'll toss in Gryffindor.
Okay.
We'll sort you out.
This is why I think he's not a Slytherin. There's the ambition and the any means to achieve his ends. What ends? If Aberforth really did want to stay home and take care of Ariana, he would have figured out a way for that to be done. And so I don't think he's brave. I think, Sue, I'm going to go with you, Sue. I think he's a Hufflepuff back then. Back then, I think he was a Hufflepuff.
Maybe I think I'm leaning towards that way, too.
What do you think?
I mean, he was a barkeep. And most Hufflepuffs tend to be...
Dude, I'm not going to disagree with that, because remember we talked about our wizarding jobs, and I'm telling you right now, and I am...
Yeah, well...
I love that none of us are even approaching Ravenclaw. Just
no, there's nothing there Ravenclaw at all.
Yeah, I don't...
What do you think, Frankie?
That's the furthest guess.
I was pretty stubborn with Gryffindor, but... Hufflepuff is seen...
Yeah, you know what? Darn it.
He's thinking about...
Because he's just so bold.
Well, he's like, I know it's so weird. I know Neville's a true Gryffindor, but with all the herbology stuff, in my mind, until, like, he runs out in the battle, he's very Hufflepuffy to me. So I think he's kind of a Neville
just
character.
Just as much Hufflepuff as Hermione is a Ravenclaw.
Right.
You know what
right.
Mean?
It's like a Neville character. He's so... He's brave when you need him.
Exactly.
He's there. So maybe he is a Gryffindor. I'm so
See, that's what I'm thinking.
For some reason, just intuitively, just being me, I want him to. I just think he's a Gryffindor, but I am leaning towards Hufflepuff.
See, and I am colored by the fact because when we were in New York, when you're talking about Neville, I identify so much with him, and then she said that she had thought about Neville being in Hufflepuff. You know. And I don't know. I just think that Aberforth had to come to that choice, to that point. This is the pivotal moment in your life. This is the one that matters. And he chose to do that. So that's a very Gryffindorish thing that stands. But I just think, too, that he was also thinking of, like, putting the other people in and getting his kids in and out. And other ways of, there are other ways of being brave without being so overt about it. No, I don't mean that.
They're just show-offs, those Gryffindors.
No, I don't mean that.
Yeah, and he was intelligent in how he was helping the kids, too.
He's not the leader type, and I think of Gryffindors as being more leaderish. I don't know.
Interesting.
Stumped.
Well, yeah, I guess some Gryffindor. But he's so independent. Like, honestly, like, he's not... And Hufflepuff, to me, they have a sense of community.
Yeah, working in a bar, though. I mean, serving the people. That seems to be
Aberforth was content on...
And just hanging... It's not a limelight job. It's not, just kind of like I'm going to be...
That's true.
You know, although he's not very clean. His bar is not very clean, but,
He could be alone with his Patronus.
I don't know. I think I'm gonna go with the Hufflepuff this time, with a strong reservation on Gryffindor.
I'm leaning Hufflepuff too.
Okay, look at my brain tells me Hufflepuff, but my heart tells me Gryffindor.
See, my brain tells me Hufflepuff, and my heart says Possum and Slytherin.
No,
I don't understand. There's no reason in Slytherin.
He punched Albus in the nose. You have to be.
Ugh, that's him being bold.
Yeah.
Slytherins don't punch people in the nose.
Good point.
They stab him in the back.
Oh, you got me, Frankie. I'm just being ornery today.
You're being a Slytherin.
What?
Don't be ornery today.
Never.
I'm never usually ornery.
Never. Never, ever.
Well, my heart is always in Hufflepuff, so that's my final
point. You gained a good house member today.
There we go. Hey, we accept them all. No, don't accept a lot. Doesn't matter, whatever.
I can just imagine his goats.
Aberforth is the goat boy of the Harry Potter world. Remember the 80s?
Yeah.
Remember goat boy?
I'm out of this conversation. I'm done.
We're done.
Okay.
Okay.
Goodbye.
Bye. Bye. Welcome back to Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, bit by bit, where we look at this book 7 in the series a bit at a time. And we're starting on a new chapter this week, aren't we, kids? Chapter 12, Magic is Might. I like that name.
Oh, we threw 12 chapters with somebody. I am impressed.
Yeah, very nice.
We win!
I like this chapter. This artwork on in the U.S. chapters, for those that are listening, the U.S. Chapters are illustrated by Mary Grandpre, and there's a very interesting one of, I think, Hermione with her magic bag. That's our illustration, which we learn a little bit more about.
That magic bag is awesome. I wish my bag had that.
Well, we open this chapter, and there are a lot of Death Eaters kind of swarming around outside Grimald Place because they've all gotten under Harry's cunning plan to go the first place people will look for him, to Grimald Place.
Yes.
Expelliarmus.
Expelliarmus, indeed.
Yeah.
The lurkers were never there, were never the same 2 days running, although they all seemed to share a dislike for normal clothing. Most of the Londoners who passed them were used to eccentric dressers and took little notice. So we're now in, like, you can tell it's in the heart of London because
that's
where you get that kind of dressing.
Yeah. Well, what's that? What, Trafalgar Square or something like that? Where they have kind of, like, very unusual people.
I think it's, like, all over London.
Okay.
There's some crazy dressing going on. It's fun.
Yeah.
I like it.
I want to go there.
I think they should have disguised themselves, like, dressed like a goth or drag or something.
Death Eater goth? That's interesting. I think, you know, one can argue that Bellatrix already is, you know.
I mean, the trio, the trio, to help themselves not be noticed. Could you imagine the Death Eaters would never expect Harry to be in drag or in goth or something?
That's true.
For real.
Yeah.
You know, thank you. A lot of people do that in London, don't they?
I'm
just
not about to answer that.
By dressing goth?
Yeah. Well,
that's a pretty common occurrence.
Maybe I'm just watching the wrong TV shows.
You might be.
Pretty much.
Anybody watch Skins?
Watch who?
Watch Skins?
No.
No.
It's like the OC for, like, England, I guess.
Oh, no.
So it's their...
Oh, it must be
pretty,
riveting intelligent television.
They get into more shenanigans.
Dude, I watch stuff like Robin Hood. I mean, I am a complete dork. Come on, I'm not going to be watching Skins. It's just not going to happen.
I'm going to get ripped on for calling it like the OC, because it's not really like the OC at all. They're about the same age, I figure.
Is it scripted, or is it like a reality show?
It's scripted.
Okay.
No.
Moving on.
Anyway, inside number 12 Grimald Place...
Yes.
On the first day of September, everybody's... There's a pack waiting because they think that now Harry's going to think, oh, it's school. I must go.
Yeah.
Are they really thinking that stupid?
Yeah.
That's funny. But I guess they have to cover their bases just to be safe.
I guess.
It's just funny.
You know.
It's funny.
But it is pretty foolish. And that's so sad. I would have been I don't know. I would have been very melancholy, the fact that, like, it's the first day of school and knowing that all my friends are going over there. But I guess the fact you're doing something for the greater good.
I'm just surprised that Hermione didn't give him, like, a little assignment to do just to get him pretend.
I mean, for real. Do you think they missed their yearbook picture? Do they have yearbook pictures for seniors?
That would be kind of cool.
I doubt it, John.
I don't know.
There should be a wizard.
No,
yeah, maybe it's portraits.
They should have.
Maybe it's like a
kidnapped three muggles and spiked Polyjuice potion to make them look like them, and then send them out so they would be chasing these muggles, and then an hour later they'd
be
muggles again.
That'd be kind of mean.
No, it'd be good.
What if they get killed?
I don't know. I don't know. Good
like, you could just randomly kidnap muggles and polyjuice them to look like Harry and, like, Imperio them to, like, go run around the Death Eaters?
Well, I guess Imperio wouldn't be an assist too.
Could you, like, confundle somebody to make them think that they're Harry Potter?
Well, I like the newspaper. Well, before we get to the newspaper, can we just talk about Creature? Because he's just, like, so Mr.
Do you love him? Come on, he's Mr. Mom.
He is. And look how
they come in. He runs off,
Mr.
tells
Mom.
Harry to take off his shoes, wash his hands, sees the invisibility cloak, hangs on a hook. You know, he's running around happy as a clam. It makes me so happy.
I agree with you. I love that part and how he makes the, I know this is getting ahead of it, but when he makes the pie for Harry or whatever and they never get to come back, I was sad.
Yeah. You think about poor Creature and what, you know.
He's slaved away on that.
Well, but poor Creature, I mean, I don't know, they don't get to tell him goodbye, they don't get to go back, Harry worries for him. It's just such a huge turnaround with one little piece of affection, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Aww.
So now we find out the big news. Snape is headmaster.
I know. I mean, what a headline.
That is just so cool.
Is it?
Though.
That's something I did not expect, I'll be honest.
I wasn't thinking it either, but it's kind of obvious, isn't it?
It is obvious. That's one of the things that kind of was like, oh, duh. Because my big thing was like, who's going to be head of Gryffindor? Because, like, now McGonagall's
you know, the headmistress, so I figured who's going to be head of Gryffindor, and I was thinking, oh, Bill's going to be the head of Gryffindor because he's going to be the dark arts teacher, la, la, la. But then it's like, oh, yeah, never mind.
You know, I love that Merlin's pants thing. I'm back on that, but, you know.
I love the Merlin's pants. And when she comes back, he goes, and what in the name of Merlin's most baggy Y-front?
Yes. Like,
Ron does.
That's improper.
Ron just makes me laugh.
Yeah.
So basically, Hermione realizes that Phineas McGillis is in Grimmauld Place, and she's got to go get his portrait and put it in that tiny bag of hers.
Mary Poppins bag.
Wait, that's when they try to... she does that once they realize that Snape is the headmaster, yes?
Yes, because she says something about Dumbledore's study, and she goes, oh, Merlin's pants! And Ron's all, Merlin's pants? She must be upset.
But I remember now, this is one of the things that I had predicted before the book came out, is that Hermione would be carrying around this bag, and she would, not like a bag, but she would be able to, they'd bring a portrait with them.
Yeah.
And they would be able
you
to communicate with
you thought it would be Dumbledore's
portrait.
I
did think it would be Dumbledore's portrait, but come on, that's still pretty...
That would be pretty hard. I mean, remember what Joe said at Carnegie Hall? Like, you know, that would pretty much destroy the plot, so...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They can't do that. At some point, I love when it breaks down the, yes, guys, this is still fiction.
We're still writing a book here. This isn't a historical account of actual events.
The fact that Hermione thought of that is one of the reasons why I love Hermione and her character.
Yeah.
She's just so essential and smart and clever, and she's like, Hermione, you're the best.
She is. I miss Hermione.
I love Hermione. She's still around.
I miss Hermione. She's still around.
I don't know.
Open your book.
Hermione would be 27 right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Or 28, depending on, when's her birthday?
September 19th.
September? Yeah, she'd be 27 right now. She'd be 28 later in the year. She's a year older than me. What? I would have been at Hogwarts the same year as Ginny and Luna.
Oh, wow.
FYI, because they're born in 81 like me. I don't know why this is relevant, but I'm telling you.
Hermione's older than me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hermione was born in 80.
Well, I like how Hermione said that you know, Ron started talking about the ministry, and all of a sudden the blue robes comes up, and she's like, what? That was a key thing, you know?
Remind the audience who hasn't heard about the blue robes in a while what that's all about.
The blue robes is the maintenance robes.
Right. Yes, of course.
But that wasn't... Have they planned their excursion to the ministry yet?
No, they're in the middle of planning it, and Ron gets all annoyed that she didn't mention... No, Hermione gets all annoyed that Ron didn't mention that everybody wears blue robes. And, you have to admit that's a big thing to, you know...
Yeah, it is.
That's true, especially when you want to sink in seamlessly. You can't look over the subtleties.
Yeah.
She's jumping all over them. What's the point of these reconnaissance trips if you aren't even bothering to tell us? You know, and it's just, you know, it's just the two of them, that little interchange, so that how they bicker back and forth. I just love it. It's just their relationship, and yet it's just, I mean, it's important stuff, but it's, I loved it.
Yeah, and then, like, the reconnaissance trips, that was really interesting to me, especially because, like, Ron would have to watch his dad and his brother, you know, from afar, you know, and, like, knowing that he can't contact them, even though he wants to. And, like, that's whole the dynamic to the story, just the maturity level of the fact that these kids, you know, they're like 16, 17 years old, or I guess they're all 17. And they can't, you know, it's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. And then Hermione, we were talking about the Hermione's like imitating people. I'll be up on level one. Dolores wants to see me. I don't know.
Just Dolores.
We just got done in that last chapter talking about Froggy Woman, you know, the little toad, and how evil she is.
Look at what Harry says on page 230. Wouldn't make any difference to her if she was so evil in the first place, about how, like, if she had opened up the locket. But,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's right. It wouldn't. She's so evil. I guess that's what Joe's saying. She's so evil that it doesn't matter to her.
I agree.
It's crazy.
So they have this really terrible plan.
Yeah, really terrible.
It makes me laugh because they spent months planning to swap identities with people and get into the ministry. I mean, doesn't that take one sitcom view
to
get?
It's pretty dang grave considering that there's just a bunch of 16, 17-year-old kids I mean, that's like, you know, some random high schoolers here in America trying to sneak into some government building and, you know, have whatever plan they think is they're confident in, but they really think you can pull it off.
Can I just say this?
That's,
I just think of Scooby-Doo every time when I read this part, because it's just always, yeah. You're right, you know, because they're always like,
Jackie Scooby.
Yes.
Jackie and Scooby.
Well, sneak in.
So Eddie Izzard says, it's an international calling card, Shaggy and Scooby.
Scooby.
No, you're right, Sue. It's just like that kind of caper. We're gonna go up and steal some robes and boom.
And at the very end, they unmask Voldemort, and it's really the janitor.
Stop.
You would have got away with it.
Battling with it.
It's just so funny, and you know, it's like, you know, I don't know. It's just funny.
I would have gotten away if it wasn't for you and those kids in their house.
It's true. It's, you know, every time, you know, it's Voldemort, every story, man, they get thwarted by the three kids. Okay, never mind.
I love, can I just say this is one of my favorite things in the entire series. Ron's going, it's one thing hanging around entrance with another cloak, but this is different. And because he doesn't want her to go, you're on the list of Muggleborns who didn't present themselves for interrogation. And she's like, and you're supposed to be dying of spatter guard at the Burrow. If anyone shouldn't go, it's Harry. He's got a 10,000 galleon price on his head. Yeah. And Harry says, fine, I'll stay here. Let me know if you ever defeat Voldemort, would you? Josh.
Yeah.
Can you just want to hug him?
Harry's wit's amazing.
Harry's dark humor, the difference between Harry's very dark humor and Ron's very earnest humor cracks me up. Like, it's so clear.
That is a very good observation. That's true.
Ron just goes for the joke, you know? And Harry has, like, a biting, sarcastic undercut.
Yeah, you know?
Yeah. It's awesome.
Biting, that's a good adjective.
And the fact that he can be funny still with all this stuff on his shoulders,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's what makes him such the kid that he is, to be able to have a positive outlook and goof around and, you know, not be a total emo prick all the time, like
John,
you think most people would be. What?
Well, he's capable of love.
That word cannot be used in the podcast.
The P word?
Yes.
Aw.
Come on.
I thought that was like common British slang.
I don't care. We are
British. I'm just saying.
Yes.
Bollocks. We won't be.
No, yeah.
But then,
do we want to go on to the dream, or do we want?
Well, they get into the ministry by a combination of Polyjuice and the Superfly. I don't. One thing that really frustrated me, like, why just make someone sick and like and give them that candy to throw up? Because they said even, you know, like it wears off like in an hour, right? Don't those candy so. Like, why don't you stupefy all of them? But I guess they need to.
They're falling back to what they know.
They needed the you know.
Yeah,
that's
just they're falling back to what they know. I mean, so that's the Fred and George, their infinite safe confines of Hogwarts. You know,
that's
so they're
true.
Just falling back to what they know. They just aren't thinking. You know. But before we get to that part, though, right, Melissa, we had this fairly dramatic thing.
And what is that fairly dramatic thing, Seuss?
That's a dream. One of those. It's not a dream. It's his mind connections. I don't
like
know.
Like a vision.
Vision.
It's a vision.
And it's pretty dramatic, actually, I thought. I was not expecting this, but, you know,
Grigorovitch.
Yeah. The wand maker that we'd always kind of just heard that one name like once or twice before. And then, phew.
I love that name. Yeah. It's such a cool name.
Grigorovitch.
So Voldemort's basically hunting down Grigorovitch, and Harry sees him. Yeah. Murdering a woman and two children.
Yeah.
You know?
It's
terrifying and sad.
Do you think they ever call him Greg for short?
That's the thing you're concerned
John,
about.
Yes, John,
a woman and a child.
I'm sure that's what they did.
Yeah, I think he probably would hate that. He'd be like, don't call me Greg.
I'm old Greg.
Okay, I think I'm done here.
Yeah.
Well, can we explain what's going to happen with Phoenix Files from here on out?
Yeah.
Yes, Phoenix Files. We are going to take Phoenix Files bit by bit, and by bit we mean the next 15, 20-minute segment at a time until we're done.
Because I think we're all past the fifth movie, right?
Yeah.
I think, but it's funny because, like, the last bit of that movie is, like, the best part, I think, anyway, that ministry battle. But
well, we could do a nice long discussion on it then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why don't we do next time everything up to the ministry battle? Then we'll do the ministry battle, and then we'll do everything after, and then we're done.
Yay! Works for me. What about you guys?
Yay!
Woo!
It's like a commentary corner.
Awesome.
All right, well, let's play the last of this
first round of Pottercast acting troupe audition.
Yeah. Rock.
Dun, dun, dun.
Bye.
Hey guys, here we are again with the final selection of our first round for the Pottercast acting troupe. Today's group are the younger girl roles. We have six of them, and we're going to play them for you right here. Starting with audition number one.
You'd think people have better things to gossip about, said Ginny as she sat on the common room floor leaning against Harry's legs and reading the Daily Prophet. Three's a mental attacks in a week, and all Romalda Vane does is ask me if it's true you've got a hippogriff tattooed across your chest. Ron and Hermione both roared with laughter. Harry ignored them. What did you tell her? I told her it's a Hungarian horntail, said Ginny, turning a page of the newspaper idly. Much more macho. Thanks, said Harry, grinning. And what did you tell her Ron's got? A pygmy puff, but I didn't say where. Ron scowled as Hermione rolled around laughing. Watch it, he said, pointing warningly at Harry and Ginny. Just because I've given my permission doesn't mean I can't withdraw it. Your permission? Scoffed Ginny. Since when did you need to give me permission to do anything? Anyway, you said it yourself, you'd rather it was Harry than Michael or Dean. Yeah, I would, said Ron grudgingly. And just as long as you don't start snogging each other in public. You filthy hypocrite! What about you and Lavender thrashing around like a pair of eels all over the place? Demanded Ginny.
And number two.
Are you sure that's a real spell? Said the girl. Well, it's not very good, is it? I've tried a few simple spells just for practice, and it's all worked for me. Nobody in my family is magic at all. It was ever such a surprise when I got my letter, but I was ever so pleased, of course. I mean, it's the very best school of witchcraft there is, I've heard. I've learned all our course books by heart, of course. I just hope it'll be enough. I'm Hermione Granger, by the way. Who are you? She said this all very fast. Harry looked at Ron, was relieved to see by his stunned face that he hadn't learned all the course books by heart either. I'm Ron Weasley, Ron muttered. Harry Potter, said Harry. Are you really? Said Hermione. I know all about you, of course. I got a few extra books for background reading, and yon modern magical history and the rise and fall of the dark arts, and the great wizarding events of the 20th century. Am I? Said Harry, feeling dazed. Goodness, didn't you know? I'd found everything I could if it was me, said Hermione. Do either of you know what house you'll be in? I've been asking around, and I hope I'm in Gryffindor. It sounds by far the best.
Number three.
I forgot to ask you, what happened on your date with Cho? How come you were back so early?
Well, it was a complete fiasco, now that you mention it.
So then, she jumps up, right, and says, I'll see you around, Harry, and runs out of the place. I mean, what was that about? What was going on?
Oh, Harry. Well, I'm sorry, but you were a bit tactless.
Me? Tactless? 1 minute we were getting on fine. Next minute she was telling me that Roger Davies asked her out, and how she used to go and snog Cedric in that stupid tea shop. How was I supposed to feel about that?
Well, you see, you shouldn't have told her that you wanted to meet me halfway through your date.
But you... told me to meet you at 12 and to bring her along. And how was I supposed to do that without telling her? You should have told her differently. You should have said it was really annoying, but I'd made you promise to come along to the Three Broomsticks, and you really didn't want to go. You'd much rather spend the whole day with her, but unfortunately, you thought you really ought to meet me, and would she please, please come along with you, and hopefully you'd be able to get away more quickly. And it might have been a good idea to mention how ugly you think I am, too.
But I don't think you're ugly. Harry, you're worse than Ron. Well, no, you're not. Look. You upset Cho when you said you were going to meet me, so she tried to make you jealous. It was her way of trying to find out how much you liked her.
Is that what she was doing? Well, wouldn't it have been easier if she just asked me whether I liked her better than you? Girls don't often ask questions like that. Well, they should. And I could have just told her I fancy her, and she wouldn't have had to get herself all worked up again about Cedric dying.
not saying what she did was sensible. I'm just trying to make you see how she was feeling at the time. You should write a book, translating the mad things girls do so boys can understand them.
And number four.
Ginny kissed Albus goodbye. See you at Christmas. Bye, Al, said Harry as his son hugged him. Don't forget, Hagrid's invited you to tea next Friday. Don't mess with peas. Don't duel anyone till you've learned how. And don't let James wind you up. What if I'm in Slytherin? The whisper was for his father alone, and Harry knew that only the moment of departure could have forced Albus to reveal how great and sincere that fear was. Harry crouched down so that Albus's face was slightly above his own. Alone of Harry's three children, Albus had inherited Lily's eyes. Albus Severus, Harry said quietly, so that nobody but Ginny could hear, and she was tactful enough to pretend to be waving to Rose, who was now on the train. You were named for two headmasters of Hogwarts. One of them was a Slytherin, and he was probably the bravest man I ever knew. But just say, then Slytherin House will have gained an excellent student, won't it? It doesn't matter to us, Al. But if it matters to you, you'll be able to choose Gryffindor over Slytherin. The Sorting Hat takes your choice into account. Really? It did for me, said Harry. He had never told any of his children that before, and he saw the wonder in Albus's face when he'd said it. But now the doors were slamming all along the scarlet train, and the blurred outlines of parents were swarming forward for final kisses and last-minute reminders. Albus jumped into the carriage, and Ginny closed the door behind him. Students were hanging from the window nearest them. A great number of faces, both on the train and off, seemed to be turned towards Harry. Why are they all staring? Demanded Albus, as he and Rose craned round to look at the other students. Don't let it worry you, said Ron. It's me. I'm extremely famous. Albus, Rose, Hugo and Lily laughed. The train began to move, and Harry walked alongside it, watching his son's thin face already ablaze with excitement. Harry kept smiling and waving, even though it was like a little bereavement, watching his son glide away from him. The last trace of steam evaporated in the autumn air. The train rounded a corner. Harry's hand was still raised in farewell. He'll be all right, murmured Ginny. As Harry looked at her, he lowered his hand absent-mindedly and touched the lightning scar on his forehead. I know he will. The scar had not pained Harry for 19 years. All was well.
Number 5.
Anyway, said Hermione, continuing their interrupted conversation as though a lump of wood not just attack them. Slughorn's going to have a Christmas party, Harry, and there's no way you'll be able to wriggle out of this one, because he actually asked me to check your freezing so he could be sure you could have it on the night you can come. Harry groaned. Ron, meanwhile, who was attempting to burst the pod in the bowl by putting both hands on it, standing up and squashing it as hard as he could, said angrily, And this is another party just for Slughorn's favourites, is it? Yeah, just for the Slug Club, said Hermione. The pod flew out from under Ron's fingers and hit the greenhouse glass, bounding onto the back of Professor Sprout's head and knocking off her old patch hat. Harry went to retrieve the pod. When he got back, Hermione was saying, Look, I didn't make up the name Slug Club. Slug Club, repeated Ron with a sneer worthy of Malfoy. It's pathetic. Well, I hope you enjoy your party. Why don't you try getting off with McLagan? Then Slughorn can make you King and Queen Slug. We're allowed to bring guests, said Hermione, who for some strange reason had turned a bright, boiling star. And I was going to ask you to come, but if you think it's that stupid, then I won't bother. Harry suddenly wished the pod had flown a little further, so that he need not have been sitting there with a pair of them. Unnoticed by either, he seized the bowl that contained the pod and began to try and open it by the noisiest and most energetic means he could think of. Unfortunately, he could still hear every word of their conversation. You were going to ask me? Asked Ron, in a completely different voice. Yes, said Hermione angrily. But obviously, if you'd rather I got off with McLagan... There was a pause while Harry continued to pound the resilient pod with a trowel. No, I wouldn't, said Ron, in a very quiet voice.
And finally, number 6.
Protego Totalum! Salvio Hexia! Carve Inimisum! Didn't I say it was an Erumpenhorn? Didn't I tell him? and now it's half of them blown apart. Oh, I hope they don't kill him. That's why I wanted the Death Eaters to catch a glimpse of Harry before we left, so they knew Xenophilius hadn't been lying. You're supposed to be a bit of static, right, Ron? They kidnapped Luna because her father supported Harry. What happened to your family if they knew you were with him? My parents are in Australia. They should be alright. They don't know anything, but I feel so sorry for Xenophilius should anything befall Luna. Oh, why did we go there? Harry, you were right. It was Godric's Hollow all over again. A complete waste of time. Deathly Hallows. Such rubbish. Although, actually, well, he might have made sure not, mightn't he? He probably doesn't believe in the Deathly Hallows at all. He just wanted to keep us talking until the Death Eaters arrived. I don't suppose it matters. Even if he was being honest, I never heard such a load of nonsense in all my life.
And that is it for the first round of auditions. As you know, we've had some issues with the voting process the past few weeks. This week, however, there will be a page on Pottercast.com featuring all three polls from all three parts of this first round auditions, where you can vote for this week's selection of the younger girl parts, as well as last week's section, which was all of the guys, and the first week, which were the adult female roles as well. We'll give about a week or so to collect the votes, and we'll be back with our second round of auditions, including callbacks for the lead roles. And that's it. Until next time.
Today's podcast was brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider in spoken word entertainment. Audible has over 35,000 titles for you to choose to be downloaded and played back anywhere, just like Pottercast. Log on to audible.com/pottercast to get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. Again, audible.com/pottercast for your free audiobook.
Welcome to Scribby 5, the 5-minute podcast of the Leaky Cauldron's premier essay project, Scribulous. I'm Laura, or Music Cows, and with me today I have Aaron, or Calpheus.
Hello.
And Linda, or Mosaic.
Hello.
Today we are talking about something that I know a great deal about, actually. I would even go so far as to say that I'm somewhat of an expert on this topic.
Really, Aaron? What's that?
Climate change. I actually did my master's thesis on it.
Aaron, this is Scribulous, not your nerdy science podcast. Did you mix up your scripts?
Nope. This week's topic is in issue 23 of Scribulous, a breaking Daily Prophet article called An Inconvenient Charm, Magic Ruining the Planet, Warns Scientist, by Nimbus 1944.
Wait, Aaron, are you saying that this article is about climate change, aka global warming?
Yep, I sure am. Now, when I did my lengthy research at MIT, I never ran across any signs that magic was the cause of climate change. But what is the research of MIT in the face of self-styled scientists Oddenham Oddie Woodford and his fascinating and detailed homespun research? I mean, this guy really seems to know his stuff, ladies.
I read that essay too, Aaron, and I'm not so sure. I think you seem like a crackpot.
Oh, no, you don't, Laura. You are sounding like one of those oil lobbyists or a spokesperson for the auto industry. And now, since his news came out, Oddie is not only up against all those muggle opponents to his environmental cause, but also he's up against all the wand manufacturers worldwide, not to mention the magical transportation lobby. Honestly, I've never seen an issue generate heat so quickly. They wouldn't be so upset if there wasn't something to it. Oddie says, very convincingly, I might add, whilst we, witches and wizards, that is, pretend to ourselves that we are operating beyond nature's confining rules, all our magic can only manipulate the world in accordance with standard scientific principles, albeit in marvelous ways. His point is driving straight toward the creation of CO2 that results from all magic. And being an expert on climate change, I can attest to the fact that CO2 is indeed the important issue at hand.
Aaron, if I recall correctly, this Oddie's fellow had also suggested that there is, and I quote, some monster in the apparition world hacking off body parts off travelers passing through.
Now, Laura, you're taking that completely out of context. And back to the point about CO2. He says, transfiguration is a good example. When a pig is transformed into a desk, a carbon-based life form is being changed via the wand flash into a silica-based object. Magic or not, a chemical process has to take place. The pig's carbon molecules are dispersed into the air and are ignited by the energy of the wand flash. The result is the creation of carbon dioxide. Flamel's law of conservation of porky matter demands carbon expenditure and carbon recovery. Equal amounts of carbon are used, true, but the pig reforms by drawing carbon molecules from the earth. C, carbon, elemental carbon, not CO2. The CO2 once created is in the atmosphere to stay until inhaled by plants.
Yep, sounds like a bunch of hogwash to me.
You know, I'm not sure. I read the article too, but I wasn't really sure what to think. Didn't he say something about a carbon wand print, Aaron? I seem to recall that term, but I didn't really understand it.
Yes. He's referring to the amount of CO2 produced by your wand. The wand print, a very clever term, if you use a great deal of magic, especially problematic for transfiguration and, worse still, prolonged spells.
Aaron, the guy just wants to make money. It's obvious to me. He's selling charm credits to anyone willing to buy them. He claims to be planting trees in the name of environmentally conscious citizens who pay him. It sounds crooked.
Well, everyone has to make a galleon, Laura.
Seriously, Aaron, I think the shepherd's cloak and the wacky gadgets, and the fact that he lives in Wigglesworth on a Ribble, not to mention the wild eyes and lightning-struck hair, it all says crackpot to me.
Okay, no fighting, ladies. We don't want to end up with a reaction as bad as the one at Hogwarts when this article first came out.
What reaction was that, Linda?
Yeah, do tell, Linda.
Well, it seems the faculty are divided on the issue, and it caused a bit of disruption of classes. I heard that Professor McGonagall easily stopped the wand use protest organized by Professor Trelawney the day after the news came out, but nothing could appease Hagrid. He began crying so much that they had to sedate him in the hospital wing, where he took up 4 beds. Madame Pomfrey is very upset. He keeps disturbing her other patients by shouting, "Must plant more trees! Must plant more trees!" We can't let this divisive issue affect the Scribulous staff as well. I suggest that everyone just read the article and make up their own quiet decision.
Okay, Linda, good point.
Yeah, I suppose you're right on that, Linda.
Thank you. So if you do want to make up your own mind about Audie's theories, be sure to read his article, along with many other fabulous ones, at www.scribulous.com. And while you're on our website, be sure to check out the calls page. We'd love to see your essays.
That's right. Our upcoming calls are July 2008 issue, Family Dynamics. Please submit those by June 5th. September 2008 is Plot Holes and How to Fill Them. Please submit those by August 5th. October 2008 is Dark Magic. Please submit that by September 5th. And November 2008 is Everything I Know I Learned from Harry Potter. Please have those in by October 5th.
And remember, we accept essays on any topic at any time as well.
That's all the time we have this week, guys. We'll see you all next week. Bye.
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 Hey, John.
Ba-ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Guess what I did today? I went and ate food. Food, lots of food.
I think I know where.
And,
now I know where.
And you know where I went for the first time by myself? I went.
Did you really?
Yes, I went to Chipotle by myself.
Oh, how was it?
It was delicious. It was so good. Because the last time I had it was with you guys, and I'm like, oh. But I was just like so down, so depressed. I'm like, I must dive into some chili corn salsa, whatever that is.
Oh, see, I don't like corn.
Oh, the chili corn salsa is the way to go.
Oh, that stuff is the best in the world.
Ooh, Sue.
So good.
That's a well-advised burrito.
You picked burrito as your choice of comfort food. I picked myself a nice big cup of chocolate.
See?
Yeah.
Literally, I was at my parents' house at the exact moment. And they have downstairs in their fridge a big thing of chocolate that you can just it's from the Trump Marina when they were there for Atlantic City at some
That's
point.
That's amazing.
You basically take a little camera and knock off.
Oh.
And so I was all depressed, so I went downstairs and I knocked off a piece of chocolate
kind of
and
chocolate
I gnawed on
it
for like an hour. It was so much.
No,
it was so good. But good chocolate.
Delicious chocolate.
Delicious chocolate. So, Sue, you picked the burrito, and I went for the sweet.
You know?
You know?
Jill picks chocolate, you know, because has Dementors for a reason. So that's normally what I wanted. But I wanted cheese and something just, and yummy and full. And I just got it.
I hear that.
I'm hungry, too.
Burrito. So don't you have a story about Chipotle to update us on, Mr. John, about Chipotle, speaking of that? Don't you have a
yeah,
story?
Yeah,
you want
happening.
Something.
Do we, really?
Yeah, you do, John.
Oh.
No!
You
were
going to
talk about it this week.
Right now.
Oh, I can't even get my story straight.
No.
This is a big deal, you guys. This was a trip. We were in Boston. And we were watching the screening for this cool documentary called We Are Wizards. And there was a raffle, like a door prize. And yours truly won the raffle.
What?
And guess what the prize was, you guys?
Pellegrino.
Guess what would be the perfect prize
I
for me. But 50, not
you've
free Pellegrinos, 50 free burritos from Chipotle.
Oh, my God.
No, he did. And I remember we sat down with no clue about...
How do you get 50?
And this is...
50.
And this is...
So we sat down. Listen, we sat down. We had no idea what any of the raffles were. We just knew we had a little ticket in our hands. And I remember hearing, oh, this is for 10 Chipotle burritos or for whatever, 50. And I was thinking to myself, wouldn't it be hilarious if John won, but there's like 600 people here? Never, ever.
Well, I was sitting there with my ticket, and I thought I'd be a funny guy because they had like two or three winners of this prize. And like the first two that got called, whenever they called the number, I'm like, woo! And I threw my hands up like I won, even though I didn't, just to be obnoxious.
Shock.
It was the second one, too. And,
yes,
and the third one, I did it before I even looked at the number. And I'm like, wait a minute. Those are the right first two numbers. And I looked, and I'm like, oh, my God. And the funny thing was is that I didn't woo that time. I was too in shock to even woo for my actual
people-
win.
All around me were going, John won, John won. I'm like, yeah,
no
whatever.
They're
like, no, really, John won. I'm like, no way.
Yeah.
So then right after the show, what does he do?
That's
he
so awesome.
Lots of burritos.
I did, because here's the catch. You win, but you win a card that says this card is good for 10 burritos. And I'm like, oh, that's a funny joke. Maybe they punch a card or something or do a thing. No. You need to eat 10 at the time. So if you need to either be ridiculously hungry and weigh 10,000 pounds, or you need to bring nine friends with you. And that's what we did. We brought friends and had...
Was it 50 or 10?
Had burritos. And now,
burrito.
For our little trip to Orlando for Disney World Day, I will be bringing probably a good 15-20 people to Chipotle.
Can we explain about this shortly?
What
basically,
about?
I'm doing a thing now where I'm slowly but surely, now that I have time, going to visit my friends. So, watch out, you guys. You're all coming up. So, I'm going to visit John, and it happens to fall on the week when... There's this conference down in Florida, so that they've been emailing us about where the actors are going to be at it. What actors, John? You know,
Phelps twins,
Devin Murray.
Not both.
Phelps.
One Phelps.
Yeah, one Phelps. The better half.
Devin Murray and who else?
Devin Murray. Hold on.
Tonks.
Natalia Tina. You know. Tuner. Is Tonks. She's going to be there. Oliver Phelps is going. Devin Murray is going.
Crumb
is going. Hopefully we can bug him about whether or not he's going to be in Deathly Hallows. And David Dico, who I believe, according to IMDb, is a stand-in for the marvelous and talented Rupert Grint. So he will have all kinds of stories about going out and partying with Rupert, no doubt.
John. No, so basically it's what happened. So I emailed the girl and said, I'm going to be down there. I'll just stop by, we'll do a quick interview, video package for Leaky, et cetera, whatever. And she was like, oh, let's do a podcast. And I said, okay, sure. You know, so it's weird. It's not like a thing where everybody from Leaky is flying out. We're doing like a big tour thing. So if you guys, all of us four are welcome to be on this podcast, you just come down. You know, it's not like, but so.
Yeah.
Right, get down there somehow, please. But so now there's a podcast.
We might be able to call them out. We're still figuring that out. Hopefully.
What do you mean call them out?
To actually have
that'd
them
be
in
cool.
connection.
Yay! So we can call you guys?
We might be able to.
Oh, that'll be great.
Yeah,
we'll try.
It.
But anyway, John, what are the actual details of timing and whatnot?
We're still trying to figure out our time. It might be either at 3 p.m. which is before a lot of the Potter festivities on Friday, which is Friday the, not next weekend or the following, it is Friday the 23rd of May, either at 3 p.m. or it might be at 1 a.m. after the Wiz Rockumentary.
1 a.m.?
And I'm going to screen that movie, so 1 a.m. would be pretty hardcore.
They're screening the Wiz Rockumentary down there?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
And there is also a Wiz Rock show with some local Florida Wiz Rock bands.
So I like stumbled into this mega Harry Potter thing.
Yeah, it's pretty BA, if I gotta say. I'm excited about it. And it is in Fort Lauderdale, and it's going to be a lot of fun if you guys are in the area. I think it's only like a $30 registration fee, which compared to most other conventions is a pretty darn good deal. And,
so that's great. All the actors are going to be on the podcast, and then that'd be great. It's like a full day. It's like a conference day, basically.
Yeah, it'll be fun times.
Yeah.
Cool.
A random live show in the middle of whatever.
Yep. May 23rd. That will be PotterCast, I think, 153, perhaps.
Guys, let's tour again. Let's do it. Let's
run.
I'm ready.
It'd be so much fun.
It'd be fun.
I'm ready.
You know, I am.
You all ready?
You guys need to send us your emails if you think we should go
on tour. Oh, let's do East Coast, please. I've never been
East Coast.
Oh, my gosh, I'd die.
Yeah, for real.
You never...
Never.
I want to start in May.
Anywhere on the East Coast?
I want to start in Maine.
How about the two weeks leading up to Terminus?
Ooh.
And we can maybe go up from Florida and then cut over to Chicago.
I don't know why I like that.
You know, there's... Frankie, are you serious? You've never been on
Boston?
East Coast?
I want to have a new one.
So much fun. And people...
Was it Boston? Yeah, it was Boston for like 5 hours on a layover once. And like I was like, I just out of high school, so my parents were like, you can't leave because we're going to Portugal. I'm like, I know.
We'd have...
And if you guys come to New York, you can have my mom's pasta.
That's a definite.
Oh, yes.
I'm in for that. I'm down. There's pasta involved. I'm there.
August 3, I have to be in New York.
Okay.
Just FYI. I'm just putting that out there. Good. Whatever we do, we got to plan it around August 3. I got to leave you guys and be in New York. So
August,
when is Terminus?
Yeah.
The
6th to the 11th. But the Wizard Rock Day is the 6th, I think. And it starts the 7th. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense. Okay.
We have to be there before that, because head of
awesome.
House. John's house, too. In my house.
We were just talking about
Terminus
this.
Is gonna be great.
What house are you in if you live on the West Coast?
Well, I think there's one of two. It's either, like, I forget, Aeolian or something? No, that's the whole university. It's, what are the names? There's Brubu and Pampero.
And then the word I can't say,
God.
M. I call it Montezuma, but that's not it. Don't kill me. They're like, oh, you're going to start house wars. No, that's not it.
Okay.
But, so, why, John? You think that's when you're going to be, because you're moving out there to the evil west away from me?
No, I'm already declared in my house.
Too bad.
Well, I'm already curious.
Hold on, I'm finding it. You guys talk.
Yeah, so.
Talk.
We have to come to Atlanta, though. If we do anything, we have to go to Atlanta, because the South, I love the South. We have to go to the South.
Yeah, I'm there.
Never.
Frank, you've never been?
We should go.
I've been,
like
West Coast stuff, but
okay,
not even I've never been to San Francisco, and I live, like, 6 hours away from it. But I've been to Nevada, Utah, Idaho, Arizona, Mexico, the Azores Islands off the coast of Portugal, and Israel. That's where I've been. Matanuska.
So it's Kohilo House and Matanuska House. Matanuska.
Babushka.
No, I call... that's what I call Brian's house, who's Brian Ross, who's Draco the Malfoy's head of... It's Brew Boo, but I call him Boo Boo House, just because I love to pick on him.
Is it Brew Boo? Because I've been saying Brew Boo.
I think
Brew
Boo.
It's
Brew
Boo. You're right. It's Brew Boo.
See, all those names are hard. You know, and then they expect me, who slaughters names on a regular basis, to say this. And I'm like, I'm doomed, man. I'm doomed. But I just think Boo Boo.
What's that ice cream called?
Boo Boo for Brian.
I am excited for people to be walking around the conference going, Brew Boo, Kohilo, Matanuska, you know, Pampero, all the time. It's all the words you're going to hear. It's not going to make any sense.
Okay, I've been pronouncing a word wrong my whole life. I learned the other day.
I'm just going to have a big name tag that says where I should be. Just hope somebody.
I am going to festoon you in Pampero colors one night when you're like asleep. I'm going to do it, and I'm going to take pictures and plaster them everywhere.
Can't wait to festoon John. That's fun.
Please.
We get to festoon you. I get the kids saying we're going to festoon you.
I don't know what that means.
Yeah, we know.
Decorate.
Oh, geez.
Decorate festively. Yeah.
Festoon's one of my favorite words. It's such an old English word, but I love it. I love it.
Before we wrap up, I have to get something right back.
So, Frankie, don't you have a story to tell us, share with our audience before we go?
It was about... I got an email from one of our listeners, and she's doing like a daily vlog. And one of her vlogs was about her going down to the grocery store and buying a bottle of Pellegrino, and it was just and her tasting it, and it was really funny. And I forgot why I was going to bring it up. There was a more legitimate reason for me just bringing it up rather than talking about Pellegrino, because I know I like talking about Pellegrino. But
she said, "Come on, I have a random chorus
funny,
of Pellegrino."
And she put a hat on and she danced to the Pellegrino song. It was pretty funny.
Pellegrino.
And then she did another video saying that Pottercast stole her identity because it was Brie and Mel. Her last name is Melvin. It was pretty funny.
Her last name is Melvin, really?
Yeah, it's totally pointless.
Okay, so we all know our friend Cheryl Klein, right? She gave me a gift this week. It is the big paperback, gigantic paperback of Harry Potter et les Reliques de la Mort. It's Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows
in
French. And it's amazing. It's so French. It's so
French.
Because the cover, well, because, you know, it's like so resolutely moody, emo. Like the front of the American cover is all bright, glorious colors and hope. And this is all, the front is Harry stands.
Oh, I've seen that one with the Shell Cottage.
And the back is...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, gosh.
So, and yeah, well, they don't show Shell Cottage. They just show the grave under the tree. So it's all like moody and watercolors.
Yeah.
You know, so it makes me laugh. So then, since I am terrible at French, I have not a French-speaking bone in my body, I decided I'm going to pick one of the great lines of Deathly Hallows every week and pronounce it very, very badly in French.
Nice.
And this one is going to be my favorite one because I get to say something that I never get to say on Pottercast.
I know what it is.
So, huh?
I
got advice on
Molly?
This one, so you know it. I can't do it. I'm laughing too hard. Hold on. Oh, yeah.
I know how to say that in French, Melissa.
It's so funny in French. I can't. Pas ma fille, espèce de garce. Sorry. It means not my daughter, you bitch, which I can say on Pottercast because it's in the book, so there. And I love espèce, apparently. E-S-P with an E-C-E and the second to last E have an accent on it. It means like... It's like a modifier, apparently, that means like subhuman and or like less than, or and garce is like a real. It's you know, it's sound. It is the way it sounds. Oh, we lost you.
That's it. That's what it was.
But hey, it was in the book. So there's my badly spoken French for the week. What should I do next week? What part from Deathly Hallows? Or 2 weeks from now, or whatever. It's so funny. The best is when Crumb's speaking, all his R's are continuously looking.
Wow.
Like he's growling. So
Grindelwald.
Grindelwald is Grindelwald.
You'll have to get to the part when they snog. You have to practice your snogging in French. Yeah.
My snogging sounds? Oh, I bet Tony in French is more intense than American.
Well, I took three of the French nights. Want to hear my sentence in French? I know how to say. Mon chat s'appelle Sassy. Au revoir à la bibliothèque dans
le French.
Yes. Whoever can say what that is.
That's something about a
can
library.
Translate it perfectly. I will be very happy. I might draw something. I don't know.
Patronus.
But it has to be the exact translation.
Oh.
It'll be revealed next
we
week's
like
show.
That.
Dun, dun, dun.
Or...
Sorry.
Ooh, da.
Dun, dun, dun. Alrighty, people. You think it's time?
I think it's that time again, guys.
Okay.
All right. Totally time. It's time to... whoa, what is it? Keep twiddling those dials.
Oh, the next password will be Parlez-vous français?
Keep safe?
Nice.
Got it.
Oh, keep each other safe.
Keep safe.
Good night. We've missed it.
Bobby is free.
I confess myself disappointed.
Now, if you don't mind, I'm going to bed.
Great Scott, no wonder. Look at the time. We've been here nearly 4 hours. Spooky how the time flies when one's having fun.
This week's podcast was produced by the Podcast Trio and Steve Bonnet. Thanks to our Scooby 5 team, Aaron and Nina, and thanks, as always, to our awesome transcription elves for transcribing this and all our other episodes on Podcast.com. For more information about the show and how to contact us and be a part of future episodes, visit Podcast.com.
Ew, there's nothing to kill.